You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
This episode contains topics that some listeners may find triggering. See the episode description for more information. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of Mama's Talking Loud. I'm Kara Cooper.
And I'm Jessica Rush. And today we are kicking off our Journey to Motherhood series with the fantastic Stephanie J. Block.
Hi, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of Mama's Talking Loud. I'm Kara Cooper.
And I'm Jessica Rush. And please help us welcome Tony Award-winning actress Stephanie J. Block.
Hello.
Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you so much for being here.
I'm so happy to be here.
Gosh. Thank you. Thank you. It is awesome to have you here. For anyone who and doesn't know who Stephanie J. Block is, she most recently won the Tony Award, your first, not your first nomination, but your first Tony. Mm-hmm. For portraying Cher in the Cher show.
Who would have guessed that nonsense?
I mean, you were fabulous.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh my gosh. And the costumes and all of it. And Cher, though, there were three of you. So you were Diva?
I was Star.
You were Star Cher.
Yeah. That's interesting because in the earlier readings, it was Diva Cher. And then they turned it to
what
Star.
What were the names of the other two again?
Lady was Lady. Middle for like Dark Lady. Yep. And Babe for I Got You, Babe. Oh,
that's perfect.
See it?
Well,
see
and perhaps, yeah. Well, Donna Summer the year before.
That's right.
My show.
That's
we
right.
We had Diva Donna. So perhaps.
That's when they pulled it, I think. Uh-huh.
Perhaps that had something to do with it.
Yeah.
However, before that, a performance of yours. Well, I've been a fan. Actually, you don't know this. I'm going to just hop right in. But I saw you on the tour of Wicked in L.A.
Oh, my gosh.
In what, 2006?
Six,
maybe? No, five?
Maybe five.
Five,
I think it's five.
2005. Mm-hmm. And as Elphaba, and you were phenomenal.
Thank you.
I was overwhelmed and overcome and in awe of you. And at
oh
the time,
gosh.
I didn't know you. And now, here we all are.
Here we are.
But that was my first glimpse into who Stephanie J. Block is. And then I saw Pirate Queen.
Yes.
Which was awesome. I love
epic.
That show.
She was epic. That whole
she was
piece.
Epic yep. When you're sword fighting after giving
Come
birth.
On.
And like
walking the, through flames.
I mean,
it was propelling epic. Down the proscenium. Yeah, it was epic.
That was epic. But most recently, before the Cher show, was Falsettos, which holds such a special place in my heart. I mean, I adore that show.
Me and too.
Your performance in that was...
I get asked a lot, you know, what's your favorite character or if you could go back and play one. And it's very difficult to choose. I mean, it's not like children, but at the same time, right? We invest and we work hard. And but there was something about Falsettos, that cast, the time in which we were telling the story. It was like lightning in a bottle. And so I think I will always have a really deep connection to that in Trina.
It was so fantastic. I remember leaving. I saw the show on the first national tour when I... For my 13th birthday.
Oh my gosh.
My parents said, we'll take you and two friends, we were living in Orange, Texas, to see either Falsettos in Houston on the tour, or the out of town of Beauty and the Beast.
And did Mama and Daddy know what falsetto?
Oh yeah,
was?
Oh, you know, they're theater people. Oh, yeah. They knew what it was.
Okay,
you know, but,
Texas.
But yeah, but we and I picked falsettos naturally, uh-huh. And my friends that went with me, they started that four Jews in a room, and they were like, "What are you watching?" You
know. So the baker's not selling bread, and Belle's not reading her book.
But I saw the show then, and I adored it. And then I saw your production, The Revival, and I kid you not, I left the theater and went out to the sidewalk, and there was a planter there, and I just sort of leaned over it and sobbed for another good 5 minutes or so.
Wow.
I was so moved. The show itself is so moving, and
but
the
then
storytelling.
You've lived a lot of life since, and you've become a mama since, and you know, that informs everything.
Oh my gosh, it was wonderful. So that was just a snippet. We've also got Edwin Drood.
I mean, the range of roles you've played is really, truly astounding.
I do feel lucky in that regard that I never have been pegged into one particular.
No.
I mean, you have such a gift. You are so good. Impersonating isn't the right word, but playing a real person, right, that people identify Cher and in The Boy from Oz. So that's a niche of yours that you're really great at, but that has not been what you are limited to. I mean, your breadth of work is truly astounding.
Thank you, Kara.
Yeah,
thank you,
I noticed that this morning because I mean, I've known you and I know in my head what you've done, but then to look at it all in one place and to sort of go down it and see the list of roles, I mean, it's really impressive.
Thank you.
And it's dreams. I mean, that's dreams.
If I told little Stephanie to look back and say, this is what your future is going to look like, I would have not guessed. But if we all start in regional theater, right, you've got to do everything in order just to work and pay your bills. Mm-hmm. So you better tap dance a little. You better sing legit a little. Right. You better belt your face off a little. You just kind of have to stir all of those pots just to make ends meet. So then you come here and hopefully you get to show those little glimpses of what you've created in your tool belt. And lucky enough, I've been able to do that.
It's amazing. I was wondering this morning when I was looking, because I know you're from SoCal because we have so many mutual friends.
Mm-hmm.
But I was wondering, with Boy from Oz, were you already living here when did you come here? Because I see all these CLOs,
right?
You know, South Bay and everything. And then
I attempted to move here when I was 22. And if you looked at my resume, I had some leads in regional theater. I had an agent. I was in the union, but the city scared the crap out of me. I was intimidated by everything and everyone, and that's kind of was what was stopping me. I was getting some roles, like, you know, I got Pittsburgh Civet Light Opera or the Muni, and I felt really great about landing these roles. But inevitably, I would come back, and there just was something holding me back, and it was myself. So I knew I had to go back home and kind of find out who I was, what was never going to stop me from wavering in my own self-understanding and wanting to be in a room, whether it was Sondheim or somebody I'd never met, and being that same person. And I was finding when I was in New York, I was shape-shifting. Mm-hmm. And I kept going, oh, I want to be whatever they want me to be behind the table. And I was losing who I was and what was making me special. And it took me several years, and it was Wicked that brought me back. Mm-hmm. So I had worked in Los Angeles with Stephen Schwartz and Winnie Holtzman, kind of with the beginnings and the birth of what would become Wicked, for almost 2 years. So I flew out to audition for Elfie. They said, love ya, but we're going with Adina, but would you want to be her standby and understudy? So that's why I came out and was with the original company of Wicked. But by the time we were to leave for San Francisco for the out-of-town tryout, I had booked Liza with no expectations. I just kept auditioning. You know, I just wanted people to see me and for me to meet them and just to get more and more comfortable in the room. And again, never saw Liza Minnelli coming, but that was going to be my Broadway debut. So I went out of town standing by and being the understudy for Adina, knowing that I wasn't going to bring Wicked back into the city. It was going to be The Boy from Oz.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, I've always talked about, and I think this sort of speaks to it, how I never wanted to move here until I had a job because it's so hard to live here. You know, there's, growing up in the South and living in California, I like sunshine. I like warm air. The quality of life just is, you know,
She's tough.
Yes.
She's tough. Yeah.
And I mean, yeah. really break it down. It's beyond the spiritual. It's beyond the talent. It's a lot to do, as silly as it sounds or as kind of loosey-goosey as it sounds, a lot of finances. Oh, you've yeah. got to have that nest egg. Mm-hmm. I still have some of my most talented friends they found themselves still behind a bar. And I yeah. have to honor that because that's what they had to do to pay for their life.
Yeah.
But with that, they're there till 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, which doesn't allow them to sleep, to go to that audition the next day.
And it
just kind of yeah. becomes an avalanche. And before you know, you look back, you're like, wow, okay, I've been here 5 or 6 years and I haven't really been able to take class. I haven't really been able to focus on the arts per se, because they really are working just to keep their head afloat. And, you know, that I think is more the story than not.
Yes.
So I always encourage people, have that little nest egg so you can focus on taking lessons and showing up and mm-hmm. keep honing your craft.
Well, and I think it's so interesting what you said about how you came here and you weren't quite ready. You found yourself trying to fit into other people, what people wanted.
Right.
And I had the completely opposite experience. I'm from New Jersey. I came to college here. The city was my home away from
home. You spoke this language
already. I spoke this language very easily and I felt very comfortable here. But I came here so young that for very many years, I did try to fit into something that people expected of me. And mm-hmm. I came to it much later. And I think it took so much like self-reflection on your part to be able to recognize that you didn't want to do that.
Yeah. Did you feel like, oh my gosh, if I didn't hit it, they're going to think I'm a failure, my hometown, because...
It wasn't so much my hometown. It was more myself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think that I fell on my face in front of people in this industry a lot. And
yeah.
I think that being able to do that definitely is, there's validity and worth in that. But I think that what you talked about, really knowing who you were as an artist and what you wanted to bring to the table and not fitting into somebody else's perception, that's really strong advice. And if I could go back in time and put that little, you know, earworm in 20-year-old Kara's ear, that yeah. would have been very useful.
Look, if you don't know who you are, they're not going to be able to cast you
right.
because
yeah.
they won't know who
mm-hmm.
you are,
exactly.
right?
Yep.
So
mm-hmm.
that strong sense of self is really important. And I thought I had it. But my worry was, right, I was reared to do this. I knew what mm-hmm. I wanted to do when I was 7. I started training hardcore when I was 11. And so the whole community was behind me. And, oh, when she gets there, she's going to get that Tony by 22.
Ooh, right.
And she's going to...
Mm-hmm.
That's
a lot
and
of pressure.
It was. So when I had that sort of reflection, this isn't your jam, girl. It's not working right now. You got to go back home. I felt like I was letting down a whole a community, and that they were going to be, there was going to be a bit of a pity party.
Right.
But I created that own scenario in my head, and I just needed to look past that, go back home, get myself better and my head right, and then... Luckily,
well, you
it
did
was
it right because I remember seeing Boy from Oz, and you were the talk of the town.
Oh,
yeah, I remember.
No,
I didn't live here then, and I still heard about her.
I mean, well, it was like this woman's making her Broadway debut. She's absolutely
right.
incredible.
Oh,
I mean, I remember it very vividly, and I remember seeing it, and you were phenomenal.
Thank you.
But so
and 14 years later,
there it came.
Right?
Yeah.
Not even
yeah.
what is it? It was 2003. Where are we?
Oh my
17
God.
Years later, Grandma.
No, but
time.
Well, I am speaking about when you moved back, was there a point when you went back that you thought maybe you wouldn't come to New York
yeah.
again?
Yes.
Yeah.
I had a long-term boyfriend. He and I were dating, well, in total, like 10 and a half years.
Oh my gosh.
I was having a really beautiful life. I had an mm-hmm. apartment I loved. We would go golfing 3 times a week. Mm-hmm. We met our friends at Huntington Beach for brunch.
Yeah.
There was this
That's
whole,
a lovely
yeah.
life.
Yeah. It was lovely,
yeah.
right? I was
yeah.
doing
Nothing wrong with that.
Revivals everywhere.
Right.
And when we traveled, it would only be 6 weeks at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was nothing wrong with that life per se. I think there was always a little bit of an ache and a little bit of a wonder and certainly a hunger to create something new, which wasn't really happening out in Los Angeles. And every time I did audition for musical theater, they would say, what are you doing here? I mean, this is the land
right.
of TV and film. Yeah. Don't you need to go
remember.
To the East Coast? And I was like, yeah, try that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I could have stayed there. I think I could have. I don't know what that life would have looked like because,
mm-hmm.
you know, looking back is always, 2020. But... that life would have been very different. I'm glad I'm here now because it did, for me personally, became a dream with my husband and my family, my kid.
And that's what I was going to sort of ask about is, you know, you're in this long-term relationship and you were back in LA. And
mm-hmm.
had you at any point started to think about motherhood or down the road or what you wanted, or was it all career?
Correct.
Like,
the guy I was dating was hard. I would bring up marriage and be like, why? Mm. We're committed to each other. You know, you're not futzing around. I'm not futzing around. I'm in it for the long haul. We got something good. How does marriage come into play? And the way he would word it was in such a way that it made sense to me. Then I would get with my family or my girlfriends or see my sister who was married with three kids at the time. And I found myself kind of regurgitating what he was telling me and using that as a line to appease them, and to ultimately, I found out, just kind of to appease me, right? Mm-hmm. I wasn't necessarily comfortable with it, but if you kept repeating it over and over enough, it made sense. So when the Wicked Tour happened, that was a big discussion between me and the guy I was dating, and he encouraged me to go, knowing that he would come visit, but it was that tour that Sebastian Arcelus walked into my life, and I went, oh, well, that's different. Still very committed to the gentleman I was dating, but all of the excuses and the lines that I was feeding myself that seemed okay, all of a sudden didn't seem okay anymore. Mm-hmm. And this guy, like, exceeded all of the expectations and all of the excuses that the boyfriend at the time were using. He seemed to be living his life without any of those excuses and able to be a great son and do his job properly and pay his bills on time and show up to work with a great attitude and a great spirit. And I kept going, oh, well, we'll see when that other shoe drops. This can't possibly be him, right? Because he came into the tour about 10 and a half months after I had already been doing it. And quite frankly, when they said, you're going to get a new Fiero, just the exhaustion of being Elphaba, and I was like, oh, man, having to find that chemistry again and to go back into rehearsals, I don't want any bit of that. So when he showed up, maybe I wasn't the most gracious spirit. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, you've been in there almost a year.
Yeah, and Mama was tired, really tired. Yeah. So the whole idea of finding that chemistry and doing the put in but he was just a gentleman from the first time I met him, and helping, you know, everybody with their bags onto the bus or the airplane, or he was a delicious human, and I recognized that right away. But I left the tour, and I now know that he had fallen in love with me within the first week or two and called his mom and said, I'm marrying this woman, and had been journaling, he bought my engagement ring before we started dating
because
literally said it was either going to be this lifetime or the next. Like, I was done when I met you. And I came back home. I lived my life, and he would call. And
were you still with the other?
We had severed ties.
Okay.
Because the other said, once you're done with the tour, I'm ready to make the move to New York City. So I was like, right on, let's do this. And then all of a sudden, hamana, hamana, hamana. He found a great place, a guest house in Los Feliz, which is a great part of town in Los Angeles. And our whole life plan started to change. He also had presented a diamond ring, but said, it's not what you think it is.
Oh.
And I said, what finger do I put that on? And it was still the wedding finger, but it was like this promise ring. And at 33, after dating someone for 10 and a half years, you think, why am I wearing a promise ring, you know? Yeah. So I said, okay, I'm just going to start from scratch. Yep, I totally release you. I wish you all the best, but it ain't going to happen with me or for me anymore. And so Sebastian just was persistent in, hey, you know, I'm coming into New York to have a dentist appointment, or I'm checking in on my apartment. Do you want to get together? And little by little we did. And then that was the end of that. I was done too.
Well, wow. I mean,
we are setting the bar very high for anybody listening, just so you know, that is not typical.
I'm just so impressed. The whole thing about the ring that he had bought it before you even started dating.
Yeah. But that's in his blood. I mean, Sebastian just has this innate romantic and sort of otherworldly way of thinking. I'm the realist and always says, okay, pros and cons list. Let's look at this. And he's like, we're gonna make it work. We're going to be able to do it all. Now, that's not always the case. Most times than not, it's not. But he is the voice of dreams, and I am the voice of reason, and somehow it all comes together and it works.
Yeah, Eric Anderson's the same way. He'll be like, we'll figure it out.
Yeah,
it's
that's
all
exactly
be good.
Right.
And
that's
I'm
right.
like, but we have to have a plan. What if it doesn't? He's like, but
it's
it won't.
Work
it's going to work out.
I love
and I'm
that.
Like,
yeah.
I think my husband and I flop back and forth between who's the dreamer and who's the realist.
Okay.
Because we both can play both roles pretty well. But like, it's it's the yin and the yang. Whoever who needs it when, you yep. know?
Mm-hmm. I think that's good.
But, yeah. Eric you know. Never thinks about the reality. Oh, but that's part of why I love him.
Yes,
mm-hmm. of course, why I want to pull my hair out. No, but...
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Sebastian, so speaking of Sebastian, we both know him. Like when I came into, I met you guys first off during Pirate Queen because Michael was,
James Scott.
Yes, yep. My bestie was in it. And so I met you guys then. We actually went to breakfast. Do you remember? Yeah, that was fun. You guys weren't married yet.
Was that a Florida breakfast?
No, it was Chicago.
A Chicago breakfast. Oh, yeah. Out of town. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Why do I feel you in Florida? Have we been in Florida together?
I don't think so. But Michael and I are from Florida. That's what I'm sensing. But so I met you guys then. And then when I went into Jersey Boys, Sebastian was ending his run, his Gaudio run.
That's so kind, right?
Oh, my God.
Kindest human being.
And then I did Elf with him.
Great. And he left to go right away.
He left Jersey Boys to do Elf. And then I went back to Jersey. Yeah. I went into Jersey Boys after Elf.
That's tag team in it.
Uh-huh, yeah, exactly. No, but Sebastian really is. I mean, he is a dream of a human, I think. Mm-hmm. He's just, his energy is so kind and open.
Positive.
And positive. And that comes across when you're around him. Like, he's just... I adore your husband. I think he's awesome.
Thank you.
It's so lovely.
Isn't that such a great feeling when someone says they adore your husband?
I have never met anyone who's like, oh, that's Sebastian Arcellus. Like, it really is just a Valentine when people say his name. And that, yes, I have nothing to do with it, but I take great pride.
Yeah, of course.
Just
of
being associated with
you
him.
Said
you
said
know?
Yes.
Exactly. I said yes.
Yeah.
Thank baby Jesus. Yeah.
And another thing, another way he is fantastic is he's an awesome dad.
He's an awesome dad.
You can see that. You can, with the onesies, the dressing up, and you guys in the Snapchat, y'all do all the filters.
My gosh, they have a relationship that Mama is very loved and respected, and Vivi wants to be like Mama in so many ways, but the relationship with her dad, she's at the stage where she says, I'm going to marry Dada, right? Mm-hmm. She doesn't understand first of all, you know, you've got the same last name. And I want to just share this little story because I have a niece and a nephew who, when they were young, they wanted to marry each other, the niece and the nephew. And my sister said, no, you guys have the same last name. You cannot do that. So they changed their name to the Schneiders. That was their answer.
We can get around this.
Well, then the Schneiders are going to get married. But she does look up to him in a way that is dreamy. That is, this is going to be the standard, I think, for what she expects, not only out of boys and men, but out of human beings. And I think that's a really great lesson that he just gives her day in and day out.
Mm-hmm. For sure. When you said yes to Sebastian, let's go back a little bit and talk about Vivi and tell us she's five now, right?
She just turned last week. Yeah.
Ooh.
I know.
So you guys got married.
I was older. I was 35 when that all happened. Mm-hmm. So again, on tour with Wicked, I was 33. So we met when I was 33. And then our engagement was pretty quick. We got married. Of course, we spoke of what our family would look like, although I felt none of that ticking clock.
You did it.
Even though at my age, I never felt that because my sister, who has five kids, fertile Myrtle, my mother was very, you know,
fertile. She had no problems. And I didn't think I would either. And every time I looked at Sebastian's face, I was like, when we decide to create a little person, it's going to be done in love. I think it's going to be blessed by God, the universe. Like, I don't believe we're going to have any problems.
Well, and it's interesting because you never felt that with, you never even sort of thought about kids and marriage with the other.
No.
So from the get-go, once you decided to go in with Sebastian and you were like, I'm giving in to, you know, you've been persistent.
Yeah.
And here we are.
Here we are.
Did you from the get-go feel this is the man I want to have a child with? Or
did you feel the mother pull? Never.
Never.
You never did.
Even when I was pregnant, I never felt I was a vessel of life. I knew what I was doing was glorious and beautiful, but I felt so lacking in the sense that, why am I not feeling like a different, ethereal motherhood sort of, you know, light? Or shouldn't I walk different? Shouldn't I be different? And that never really clicked. And with the family part, he and I had many discussions, and at the end of those discussions, we'd be like, well, there's no rush. We'll figure it out. Right. There's no rush. We'll figure it out. And then 5 years came, and it was 40 when I said, here we are. Now I am starting to really look at you and say, I feel like our love deserves to have another little person walk the earth that is of you, because that just needs to happen, Sebastian.
Well, you're pretty awesome, too.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
don't sell yourself short. You know.
Come on. Thanks.
I mean, I understand what you're saying, but you're pretty fierce.
And, you know, whatever that looked like, our finances were in place. We had a 2-bedroom apartment that we could actually make a nursery. And then it didn't happen as easily as I thought, right? So I went off birth control. The loving was happening, but I would think maybe we'd be 5 days late and there would come my cycle. And I thought, oh, well, that didn't happen. And then my cycle was kind of all over the place. And I met with a holistic healer who said, perhaps you are having little miscarriages along the way because I am looking at your cycle.
How long a period of time was this over?
I didn't get pregnant until I was 42.
Oh, wow.
So we tried before, not very safely, but if I got pregnant, I got pregnant, right? So 38, that would have been fine. 39, that would have been fine. 40 was...
let's do this.
Tracking my periods, tracking my ovulation, doing the whole what's your body temperature, blah, blah, blah. So then I tried acupuncture, and she was remarkable, and she gave me all these Chinese herbs, and we were trying to do that, but with a performance schedule, it wasn't working out. Mm. Those Chinese herbs were doing a whole lot of stuff to my system.
Mm. What were you doing at the time? Drood?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's just say I could have pooped my pants on stage multiple times. Like, those
terrifying
Chinese herbs are
no joke.
And you don't know when they're going to hit, and you don't know how you're going to. So I was having crazy hot flashes. I was having like very small glimpses of like 1 or 2 second blacking out on stage.
Oh my gosh.
I was having crazy cycles of pooping. Like, hello, hello. We are talking loud, these mamas.
Yeah.
And then I did get pregnant. And I lost the baby. I truly believe I was losing the baby on stage. I was singing Writing on the Wall, and I went into massive cramps and this crazy heaviness and weight, and I kept singing. And if you know the words to that song, it's about clinging to life. It's about how every breath is a gift. And I'm singing, and I'm just like tearing up, and I think Cheetah took notice, and my dresser certainly did. And I said, I think I just lost this baby. Sure enough, went home. I was bleeding a lot. We called my doctor. There's this whole discussion of how much you're bleeding and how quickly, and you know. Mm-hmm. And I went in to see the doctor the next day, and we had lost the pregnancy. And that is when he and I really started to talk about, I think the city has a lot to do with how I am working. Mm. I'm at a stress level that I don't necessarily think is healthy for me. Mm-hmm. It just never stops, that pulse and that metronome. It's some feed on it. And for me, at that time in my life, the city was just taking way more than she was giving back. So that's when we started to look outside of the city to find a place that had a yard and a sky. And so again, we started the hunt.
I was what I thought, several weeks pregnant. I took a pregnancy test and everything seemed great. And we went into my doctor. There was a little heartbeat. And then I lost her. Mm-hmm. So from that point on, I thought, okay, Eastern medicine is always going to play a part in my life. I like that sort of homeopathic. I like listening to my body and knowing that I understand my body far better than any doctor could. But I knew I was going to need to have Western medicine and some help. Mm-hmm. So we went to this doctor called Dr. Sammy David, which made us laugh because we always thought we were going to Sammy Davis Jr. He is known as the preeminent doctor to get you pregnant. And his list of questions when we first met with him, I must admit, I came up short. He was asking all sorts of things and about textures of things and mucosal things. Oh, wow. And I was like, I have not written all that down. So there started new charts at a much more detailed fashion. And there was a lot of, so now I'm doing, let's see, Little Miss Sunshine. And I'm getting shots and we are going home and I'm waking up at 5:30 in the morning and sorry, Seb, but everybody's going to know. And then we would be intimate in the morning and then I would have to like hold something for a little while right. And hold his thing for a little while and then go on a train and get to that doctor and then do some tests. And yeah. So I was going into rehearsals very early and James Lapine would be there and he would either see me sitting on the stairs of second stage crying or having a very deep discussion with some sort of medical professional and he would see the bruises on my arms and my legs and he's like, what are you doing? And how are you doing this while creating a new show? Maybe you need to sit and maybe postpone this a little bit. And as the artist, I knew, and as a woman, I knew he was saying the right thing to me. Mm-hmm. But as somebody who wanted the results on the other end, somebody who is a perfectionist, somebody who doesn't want to be told, this isn't going to work for you, I fought. And so I continued for a couple more weeks, and it just was getting exhausting and actually debilitating. I was having trouble functioning in any capacity. Mm. My language as a wife was not kind. I was not who I needed to be in the rehearsal room or to anyone in humanity, really. And so we put a hold on it.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Mama's Talkin' Loud. Special shout outs to Rachel Spencer Hewitt for our fabulous graphic, Kristen Anderson Lopez, Bobby Lopez, and Justin Ward Weber for our awesome theme song. Our producers, Dori Berenstein, Alan Seals, and of course, the Broadway Podcast Network for bringing us to you.
If you like what you're hearing and you want to keep the conversation going, you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook. And of course, subscribe and review us wherever you listen to your podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.